Welcome to the Parent Equation Podcast with me, Aisha Murray. This podcast series is full of inspiring stories from working parents who are passionate about designing a life that works for them and their families. Working parents like you who want a purposeful, rewarding career alongside a balanced family life. So today I'm joined by Hannah Salton. Hannah started her career in recruitment and is now a career coach and consultant and also the mum to a toddler. So welcome, Hannah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So today, Hannah, I think what we're going to talk to you about, I think, is your journey. So your journey, again, which is a very hot topic for most people all of the time, from corporate life to self-employment and how that transition happened, how the journey happened, what gave you the impetus, what was the catalyst, all of that kind of thing. And also how family life has weaved its way into that journey. So maybe let's start with that catalyst. What was it that took you from corporate secure career into the world of actually more insecure self-employment?
Yeah, a lot of people have asked me that, and I would say there wasn't kind of one big epiphany as such. It was something, I mean, coaching really is the short answer. It's what drew me away from being employed in the corporate world. I was really passionate about coaching, I guess. So I'd worked in the corporate world for 8 years before I became a coach, and there'd been a couple of points in my career where I'd suffered a real lack of confidence. And one in particular was when I sort of first started at work, so my first kind of year of working. I was surrounded by people who were looked really polished and professional, and I just felt, how have I managed to trick my way into being hired here? And I got some mentoring and some coaching when I was kind of going through that, and it was so invaluable to me and really helped me get to know myself, which I think is a big part of confidence, actually, knowing your strengths, knowing your weaknesses, and knowing yourself really well. So I think because I'd experienced such positive results from coaching, I was always quite interested in it, and I was always very interested in personal and professional development. I didn't really know much about coaching as a profession, and didn't really think I could do it. So I just put it off and carried on, and then just kind of kept coming back to me, what if this, what if that? And then after I'd been working in recruitment, after been working for about 7.5-8 years, I made the move and did a coaching qualification and sort of made the leap away. And I could talk about it in lots more detail, but I guess that's a high level kind of introduction.
Yeah, because made the move, it sounds makes it sound easy.
Yeah,
woke up one morning, I just thought I'll just make the move. But it's not the process that people go through to get to that point. So I suppose, what would be your people listening who are definitely wanting career change or looking at career change? Yeah. I suppose, what would be the first natural step, the easy step to take to start them on that journey?
So, I guess before I answer that, from my perspective, I probably decided about a year before I quit, before I left my secure, stable corporate world job, that I was going to do it. And I almost spent that last year of work getting everything ready. I did my coaching qualification, I built my website, I did a lot of networking. I had loads of conversations with other coaches, career consultants, just to absorb as much and learn as much as I possibly could. I did a lot of free coaching, but I didn't actually really start building up my paid client base until after I'd left, just because I felt like I almost wanted a bit of a clean break, but I almost got everything ready to that point, and then kind of flung myself in and put everything that I'd been prepping for and practicing into practice. But to answer your question about what's the first step, I think it's a really key question, actually, because it is all about small steps. And I think that very often we see big career changes or leaps, and it feels a bit intimidating, it feels a bit overwhelming, and I totally get that. But for me, actually, it was a series of small steps. Even though the leaving of my job was on the outside, it appeared a big leap, I had done so much groundwork and laid a lot of foundations. For me as well, I also had a good backup plan. I had a few leads of how to do freelance work in my previous career, which I didn't actually end up needing. But I did know that if the coaching thing took a while, then I had a sort of backup of freelance recruitment stuff that I could do, which was a real helpful safety net, I think. I think it's just starting small, starting now, and exploring and being curious, really.
And it's also interesting that, again, a lot of conversations I have, the catalyst is often having a family. So child one comes along, or child two, and it sets wheels into motion about thinking about actually what is this life now about. But for you, that was pre-family. So I suppose the interesting point there is actually, if we've got a thought about we want to do something else, there's a niggle of there could be something else I should be doing, it's not waiting necessarily for a specific trigger. It's just starting the process, starting the research, starting the discussions with people. And it can be a slow, steady burn for as long as it takes until you make the move.
Definitely. I'm a huge believer in there's no right time. There's no perfect time. And I had lots of discussions, particularly with my husband, about when was a good time. You know, should I wait until after? You know, should I stay in the world of work to almost get a maternity leave or two? Should I wait until I'm more senior to leave? So for me, it was very unclear, but actually I thought there are pros and cons to every angle. You know, at least when I left the corporate world, I didn't have dependents. We had a mortgage, but I didn't have that kind of family to support as such. And for me, that was the right time, and I'm really glad I did it. But I think you can talk yourself out of anything. And whilst, you know, you might want to, you need to be mindful of timing. And for me, that was why I planned it quite a lot in advance. I think waiting to feel completely ready, or waiting for the perfect time, you can just hang around waiting forever. And it was interesting. A lot of people said to me, oh, you're so brave. And I felt like such an imposter, because I absolutely didn't feel brave. I felt really nervous and I felt really scared, but I still felt like it was absolutely the right thing to do. So I think you can still feel nervous, but still take those steps and still move forward if you're sure that's what it is you want to do.
Yeah, and I think it's really relevant with working parents. I've got a couple of clients at the moment, actually, very similar stories, where because they are either pre-family and thinking about having a family, it's going to sort of key phase in people's lives, or they're thinking about child two, they're hanging on to jobs that they don't want, just in case the baby comes along and they get the maternity leave. And we keep going round and round in circles, but that just in case, and having a baby takes as long as it takes, you know, weeks or years. So who knows? So it's making the change when you feel you want to, rather than pinning it on something which may never happen, may happen in a very long time, and then potentially missing out on opportunities along the way. So I think that's a vital part of just doing something when you feel like you're in the right space to do it.
Yeah. I think there's a big difference between feeling like something is the right decision for you and feeling ready. And I think sometimes it's tricky, and that's why working with a coach can be so helpful. And I'm sure your clients are finding that exploration really useful. I don't know, it's very difficult. This is why coaches aren't meant to really give advice. It's such a personal thing. And I think only the individual knows what's right for them. But yeah, I definitely think that waiting for the perfect time is, you know, it can mean that you're just waiting a really long time. And regardless of children, you know, I've worked with a lot of clients who stay in jobs that they're not happy with because of other reasons, like pensions, benefits, perceived security. You know, I've worked with teachers who really, really value the school holidays. And, you know, that is important stuff. But there comes a point where if you are so unhappy in your job, you know, you have to almost make that decision that you might have to sacrifice the school holidays, or yes, you might have to sacrifice a little bit of pension, but it's almost a short-term sacrifice. But if in the long term you love your job a lot more, then it's going to be the right thing.
Yeah, it's just such a hard concept, isn't it, sometimes for all of us to imagine what if what could it look like if all of it falls into place.
Absolutely,
so unattainable.
And I think, you know, sometimes we underestimate how scary uncertainty is. And a lot of people would rather stay And this isn't a judgment. I can relate to it myself, but a lot of people would stay in a uncomfortable situation that they're familiar with, then risk a new unfamiliar uncomfortable situation. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, it's, I think there is reassurance in the comfortable, there's reassurance in the familiar, even if it's not particularly positive.
Definitely. Yeah, so talking about uncertainty and familiarity, you were then thrown into a whole whirlwind of uncertainty and unfamiliarity when your son was born 3 months early. And no one prepares themselves for that when you're, you know, pregnant, just think, hopefully thinking it's kind of going to go full term and it's might be ups and downs, but it's going to be okay. And then, so obviously, when something that dramatic happens, and you can obviously, you can share your story, I've not been in it, is can you ever prepare for that level of uncertainty? And how did you, especially because you're already a coach by that point, so again, maybe your mindset was more adaptable potentially, how did you cope with that immense change? And 3 months before you were ready, obviously, with all these things to happen as well, how did you manage your way through all that?
Yeah, it was a strange one, and it was obviously really difficult at the time. So I had quite a normal pregnancy. All of the appointments went well. I was considered low risk. Everything was pretty straightforward. And then I started bleeding on and off for a few days, and then basically went into early labour. So I gave birth to Max at 27 and a half weeks. So yeah, as you said, about 3 months early. And it was just a massive shock. I didn't really know anyone, or I didn't think I knew anyone that had a premature baby. It's interesting. Once you have one, you do sort of hear of stories or hear anecdotes of more people. But I hadn't really experienced, you know, no one in my family or close friends. So yeah, it was just a real shock. And I think, as you say, nothing can prepare you for it. But to be honest, I do feel that having gone through a few career ups and downs, and through kind of, again, knowing myself really well, and from just experiencing those career lows and things like that, it did help me, I think, because I knew, well, I've gone through, you know, harder times before, and that resilience, I guess, it did help somewhat.
And that resilience is a word that coaches talk about a lot. We bandy that word around a lot, but it's very, very important, which is why we do. And I think people understanding that they have been through situations before which they have overcome and they have coped and formulated strategies, etc. So you've mentioned there that some of your resilience came from your career, but when you were actually in the moment and in that period of time, how do you think you leveraged that resilience?
The first thing that I would say is I used to believe that I wasn't a resilient person at all. I remember when I worked at a law firm, we talked a lot about we wanted to hire trainees that were resilient. It was and still is a quality that a lot of people look for in their hires. And I would consider myself quite an emotional person, quite a sensitive person. I'm a bit of a worrier, and I feel things quite deeply. And I had taught myself or told myself kind of throughout my life that that means I'm not resilient. And it's only kind of now when I look back at kind of, again, the highs and lows of my career and how I've dealt with other things, I do actually finally realise that actually maybe I am quite resilient. And I think that's a big learning for me. I felt that I'm not tough. I felt like I'm not a strong, resilient person because I'm sensitive. So how can I almost marry the two? And it really changed my perception of what resilience is. I've forgotten what your original question was, though.
How you leverage that resilience in the moment. Yeah. So that resilience are built up over time, and you get more resilient, but then once you're in that situation.
Yeah. So when our son was born early, to be honest, I certainly didn't feel resilient at the time. I never thought to myself, I'm dealing with this really well. And honestly, it was just a case of getting through each day. He was in hospital for a very long time. So he was in hospital for 3 months and 3 weeks. And it was hard. I mean, my husband was incredible. We kind of got through it together. And I think just it sounds almost a bit simplistic, but just focusing on each day at a time was what got us through. And trying to find, I don't necessarily mean distractions, but, you know, we weren't living in hospital with him. We visited him every day. We spent a lot of time with him, but he was in intensive care, and, you know, we couldn't even hold him for the first few weeks. And so we almost had to kind of keep busy with doing other stuff. When we weren't at hospital, I was expressing milk, and that kind of routine of expressing milk for me, I found quite therapeutic because it gave me something useful that I could do. I did also, not obviously straight away, but because he was in hospital for quite a while, I did end up, I did some coaching work while he was there. And I didn't necessarily need to, but actually I really found that it helped keep me sane, and reminding myself of what I love to do and working with clients, it just allowed me to be useful in a different way. And yeah, it was, you know, if there's nothing useful you can do in hospital, sometimes having another focus, for me anyway, it helped kind of helped keep me sane.
Yeah. And you were self-employed at that point. Was your husband employed?
Yes. So he is employed, was employed, works full time. At the time it was kind of COVID time, so I believe he was working from home. Which helped, and his employer are great. They're very flexible, so he was allowed, you know, time off when he needed to go to the hospital and visit. But yeah, he was working full time.
Yeah, because I think that's again something that comes up so much, is that even some of the more flexible employers, there is still a limit to that flexibility. And when it comes to compassionate issues and compassionate leave and things that sort of, I suppose, not the norm potentially, that's when parents struggle to get the time they need, and not just the time, but support from work they need, the emotional support they need to be able to go and deal with something that you absolutely have to be there for. And I think that's something that again comes up quite a lot, is it's fine to say yes, parental leave's ticked, you know, these sort of obvious ones are ticked, but actually there's a lot of situations, not just having premature children, but a lot of caring situations that emerge which aren't on their kind of list of things. And it's how do employers truly allow themselves to be flexible with all manner of different scenarios. I don't know if that's something you've come across through your coaching or through your clients or anything else potentially.
I guess I have, in terms of clients wondering what they can ask for and what they can't. And I think it's a really good point, and it's like you say, it's not just children, it's any caring responsibilities, but it's also mental health. And I hope organizations and employers are a lot more flexible, open, and etc. than they used to be. But it is still hard, because there aren't guidelines, and there almost can't be too many guidelines, because everything is so specific and everything is so different. And yes, you can create laws and you can create policies, but very often, you know, we're all individual, and things need often to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. So I think it is really, really difficult, and I think that is when working for an employer who you like and who respects you, and, you know, having a good relationship with your boss is so important. And I think that sometimes when employees don't have that, it can have such a huge impact on career satisfaction, and it can be a huge driver to make people want to move on. A lot of clients that I have worked with, you know, either a poor relationship with their manager or poor understanding from their employer is fundamental. And if you don't have that, it can, you know, no matter how much you like your role, it can really make you want to leave.
Yeah. So just continuing that flexible working theme, as a coach, as a working mum, as a recruiter in the past, do you think that parents should feel comfortable, so say they've got an interview lined up, should they be comfortable enough to be able to say to their prospective employer in interview one, by the way, I've got kids, I would like some flexibility, or these are my priorities, I might need these kind of, you know, these are my boundaries, etc., etc. I always hear these conversations going round and round about what the right thing to do is. When do you think, with all those different hats you've had and have on, when is the right time to introduce the notion to an employer that you will require some level of flexibility because you're a working parent and you have needs and priorities?
Yeah, I think the answer is it depends. I think that in an ideal world, we would all feel empowered from when we engage with an employer, from when we apply or attend an interview, to be able to set out our requirements and our boundaries. I think it would be naive of me to encourage everyone right from the offset to approach an employer and, you know, with a long list of what may appear as demands, because it would be great if employers always were able to meet those, but in reality it's not always the case. So I think it is very much on a case-by-case basis. It depends on things like what your requirements or what you're asking for. It also depends how the job is positioned. For example, if a role is advertised as being full-time and you know that you only are able to work 3 days a week or even less, if the requirement of the role is full-time, then an employer may not be open to that. I mean, whether they should or not is a different thing. But so I think a lot of it depends on what the requirements of the role are. I think at interview to be honest, I think if I was giving someone advice, I would say if your requirements seem reasonable to you, wait until offer stage. And as long as, again, you think that your requirements are reasonable, which a lot of them are, having that negotiation conversation at an offer point is a good idea. And the other thing to bear in mind is there may be a compromise. It may be that you want X, Y, and Z, and your employer is only able to offer you two of those. But hopefully, there is a little bit more flexibility now, and companies are open-minded. But it almost just depends how much, if at all, that kind of directly impacts the business.
Yeah, and it has to be transparency, I think, and maturity. So again, I had a client a few weeks ago who interviewed. The job was great, exactly what she wanted. But she knew that it was potentially quite full on, sort of startup scale up sort of size. So a lot going on. And she asked them very honestly, I think it was my second interview. She just said, what are your flexible working arrangements? And she's got two young kids. And they said, to be honest, not because we don't want to be flexible at the moment, we just can't be. We can't promise you anything because we are just in this current scenario where it's all hands on deck. There's tons going on. We've got investors breathing down, all this kind of stuff. And they're very honest with her. And she said, well, thank you, but then I can't proceed because this is my minimum, these are my boundaries, and they're both unreasonable. And they just came to a mature understanding, and they said, get in touch if you're feeling like you can take it on, get in touch with us in the future and we'll talk to you in the future. So it was amicable, it was adult, it was mature, and it was just agreed that it wouldn't work for both parties. So I suppose just because an employer is appearing to be inflexible, it doesn't mean they're doing it for malicious is the wrong word, I can't think of the right word, but for negative reasons. They might have a whole load of challenges themselves. It means at this time they just have a job to do that they can't be.
Absolutely. And I think that is why it is so nuanced and why it does vary so much. And it's easy to see both sides, because yes, parents and workers in general need boundaries, they need a certain degree of flexibility, all of that, but ultimately businesses need to work, and especially if they're serving clients in a fast-paced, busy environment, sometimes there are pressures or demands of the job where certain things are needed. I think what is tricky is knowing when it's a kind of genuine requirement or when an employer is taking the mick and just blitzing its staff for all it can get. But I think those honest conversations are so important. I think honest conversations before, during employment can save a lot of challenges, really.
Yeah, and it's a two-way street. We always say this, don't we? It's a two-way street, interviewing. just as much for the interviewee as it is for the interviewer to make sure it's the right move for them, and they're going to get what they need out of the role and out of the company. So you're obviously a mum to a small child or to a toddler, but self-employed. So do you feel that maybe if you were back in the corporate world, so trying to remember all those years back, how do you think your life would have looked with a small child in corporate versus now having, I say flexibility, it's hard running my business, but having the slightly more freedom of being self-employed, how do you think those two things would have differed?
It's interesting because I often think about this, and I often think about, you know, would I ever, for the perfect role, ever want to go back to being employed to working in the corporate world? And with my current mindset, I can't see any reason for me to, but obviously never say never. And when I think about how my life would be if I hadn't left, or if I, you know, still worked, I honestly find it quite difficult to imagine, purely because I know certainly when I imagined being a parent before I was, it's impossible to imagine. And so, yeah, it's just difficult. It's not bad, but it's just almost hard. And I also think working, being employed in a kind of post-COVID world is different as well. So I think it will be different, but I find it genuinely tricky to imagine almost what it would look like because I haven't done that.
Yeah. And as you say, the post-COVID world has really thrown everything up in the air. And now I think we're seeing the repercussions of the post-COVID world, where everyone's now having to start to go back to work to some degree. And we've kind of, I suppose, for many of us, got into slightly sort of lull of being able to be at home all the time and allow, you know, school runs can be done more easily and picking up kids from clubs and ferrying and stuff can happen around work. Whereas now, then if you're seeing this with your clients, that they're now being asked to return 3 days a week, quite often, most of them. And that's back to the commute, back to the hour on the train, back to, you know, after school clubs and more costs and that kind of frenetic life that I tried to leave behind, really. Are you seeing that happening more? And if so, how do you think people could deal with that transition back to what we had before, but we haven't had it for so long that it feels like a big transition again?
One thing that I have noticed is that there is a huge variety. And even though, yes, as a general whole, more people are going back to the office, I have noticed with my clients and with just with my friends, there is a real variety in terms of their employers' messaging. And I think that makes a huge difference. I know some people whose employers have said, you now need to come back in the office 5 days a week, and that's that. I have had a client in particular who now almost never goes into the office and misses that and almost wants that. And I also have a client who can kind of go into the office whenever they want, but when they do go, it's just not the same. And so I think a huge part of it is that autonomy and the ability to choose, and almost whether it's 1 day, 2 days or 5 days, it's when it's completely enforced point blank that I think a lot of people get a bit frustrated. And so I think a certain amount of choice is really helpful. My husband's company has gone remote first, and so he is able to choose basically when he goes in, and so it tends to be when I'm working at home he goes into the office, and when I'm not working he's here, and that works really well for him. But it's amazing that he can choose and flex that up. So I think it's hard to make assumptions because some people's preferences are so different, but I think a certain degree of autonomy and being able to choose makes a massive difference.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's enforced of mandate from above is going to, but it's just so funny because you think about 4 years ago, the thought of the employees being able to say, hold on, I'm not coming in more than 3 days a week. Mm. It's so bizarre to think where we are now in our empowerment, I suppose, of being able to ask for actually what we want, Whereas we'd never thought about that 4 years ago. It would do as you're told to a degree.
Yeah.
And now it empowers you. And I suppose that ties back to our original points about how feeling empowers to make a change can also. So maybe this whole new mindset post-COVID of we've got flexibility now. We can make choices about how we want to work, hybrid, remote, first, etc. Does that then trickle into our overall mindset? Actually, do you know what? We're empowered to make more changes or different changes. Actually, maybe I don't want to work in this way at all anymore. I want to do something completely different. So do you think that's something you've seen, that maybe that empowerment mindset is just growing generally for people?
Yes, it is. And I think it was even during COVID, it forced people to reevaluate their lives. And it forced a lot of people to think life's too short. But it's kind of a double-edged sword in that, yes, it kind of wakes you up that time is finite and happiness is important. But I do think it's almost curtailed somewhat by other things going on, you know, the cost of living crisis, economic uncertainty, you know, things like that. It's a tricky one, and I think a lot of people struggle to reconcile that. I do hope that it has empowered a lot more people to even just get clearer on what they want, you know, because I think that's hard sometimes, and not necessarily clarity around a specific job role, but even just clarity around boundaries and clarity around, you know, I want to not hate my job and things like that. It's always a tricky balance. I think it's feeling empowered, but it's being able to almost reconcile that with whatever context your career is in.
Yeah, because it doesn't mean you have to make a dramatic change to anything. And actually, I think the empowerment comes from just allowing yourself the time to just think about what it is you want or need, what situation you're in now. And it might be that you're happy, actually, in your current situation, and it doesn't need to be dramatically changed. But it's just acknowledging that and then moving on, confident in the knowledge that you're in the right place for now.
Mm.
And maybe that's what the empowerment means. It's just empowerment, just to give yourself permission to think about what it is, where you are. It doesn't mean you have to then go out and change your career and, you know, start again, but just be more aware of what you're doing and why you're doing it, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw something on social media this week. It was Stephen Bartlett said something about Gen Z, people in their 20s, they often feel like they need to become their own boss. You know, they need to set up be a digital nomad, set up their own business. But actually, that doesn't suit everyone, and not everyone wants that. What I think is important is to recognise what that almost vision gives you. It gives you autonomy, it gives you a certain amount of flexibility, maybe it gives you job satisfaction. You can get that being employed. And so I think it's important when people have this vision or have this idea of what it is they want to do, it's almost breaking that down and thinking, well, what specifically about that is it that motivates me, and can I get it in a different context, or is, you know, that original idea, is that the one for me?
I use that example sometimes with clients in the past, where you might have this vision that you want to open a skydiving school in Bali or something. And your immediate reaction is, that's never going to happen. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, I've got two kids and a mortgage, and how on earth am I going to Bali? But it's not the point, not going to go to Bali and open a skydiving school or a diving school, whatever it is. It's, what does that mean to you? Why is that something that's drawing you in? What is it about that scenario, that vision, that's exciting you?
Mm.
And it's then saying, right, how can we take those feelings and those that rationale and apply it to real life, to where you are now? And it may be that you decide, actually, I'm going to chuck it all in and go live in Bali, who knows? But if you can't do that, which parts of that vision can you apply to your current scenario? So I think it's again, start big and start with what you perceive to be unrealistic.
Yes,
it's the nuggets that are in that vision and in that dream that can be extracted and put to good use now on the ground, I guess.
Definitely. I think don't talk yourself out of something too early before exploring it and actually working out Because sometimes I think as well, we have this idea of what we want, and actually once we explore it, that's not what we want, and that's okay. But there's no harm in exploring it. And I always try and encourage my clients to do that. It's when we're brainstorming ideas about possible career changes, write down an option, even if you think it's completely unrealistic, even if you're not sure if you want it, because at least then you have it on your list. Even if you cross it off later, at least you've acknowledged it.
Yeah. I think that's also important. It's just being open to opportunities and thoughts. So Hannah, thank you so much for joining me today. I think as well, the main, I suppose, takeaways I think for me and for the listeners are your personal journey through premature babyhood and how you've managed to get through that and have chatted the work. But also I think the overarching theme is just that we can all design a life that works for us and our families. It doesn't have to be big risk. It just needs to be opening our eyes to the possibilities, as you just said, and the opportunities, and not ignoring what might be in front of us. I suppose having a bit more confidence to have those honest conversations, actually, with not just with employers, but with family, with friends, about what you want. And maybe part of that accountability by saying things out loud can start making them a reality.
Yeah, definitely. I think honest conversations, whether it's with your employer, clients, your partner, your family, sometimes they're difficult conversations, but I think that having them can really, really help.
So where's the best place to find out more about you and your business and your journey?
If people want to find out more, I would definitely encourage them to connect with me on LinkedIn. So search for Hannah Sultan on LinkedIn. I also have my website, which is hannahsultan.co.uk. And I guess just to say a little bit more, so I work with almost two groups of people. I work with graduates trying to get their first job, and I work with professionals either contemplating a big career change or a small career shift. I have this month published my first book as well, so
congratulations.
Thank you. So if anyone's kids are graduating, it's basically aimed at students and graduates to help them with the job market, and that's called Graduate Careers Uncovered, and it's available on Amazon.
Perfect. Graduate careers now are very, very different to graduate careers when I graduated quite a long time ago. So yeah, very, very different world for them.
Yeah, so definitely.
A very useful resource, I'm sure, your book. So thank you so much for joining me, Hannah.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been great.
Thank you.
To work with me, find out more at aishamari.com, connect with me on LinkedIn, or check out my free resources and quizzes at aishamari.com/resources.